All right, well, let's talk about time management. That's the topic for the day, and the time management tune-up. I trust that some of you are here because you're recovering from what happened over the summer. One of the things we've noticed at Atticus is that no matter how good your time management gets during the first half of the year, over the summer it gradually erodes. And it's probably due to your taking some vacation, a lot of your staff being gone on vacation, perhaps the more laid-back attitude that we generally take to life throughout the summertime, especially for those of you in the Northeast, where summers are short and winters are long. People really appreciate the break that summertime brings them, and they have a more laid-back attitude. A lot of offices will even close on Friday afternoons or things like that. And generally what that means is by the time we get past Labor Day, all of the good time management things we've learned from Atticus and implemented over time may have just fallen by the wayside and gone to hell in a handbasket. So I'm sure a few of you are out there able to identify with that statement. If you look at where your time management was in May and where your time management is now, you've seen that it's slid down. So here you are in September, perfect time to get it back up and running and get it in good shape, because you really have an opportunity, a window of opportunity here in the fall, to have some very productive months in the rest of September, October, and leading up to Thanksgiving at the end of November. So, by the way, there's one or two of you. I'm still hearing quite a bit of background noise. If you could please mute us, I think that would be helpful for everybody else. Sounds like you're in your car. We're hearing a lot of car-type noises. If you can't mute it, if you could possibly hang up and call back once you're able to get to a landline, that would be appreciated. All right, great. So when we're talking about time management, you want to think about time management as maybe not the most important thing that Atticus teaches about, but it's certainly the first thing. It's the foundational thing. You know, if you want to think of Atticus as a teaching organization and us as having curriculum areas, there's really four main areas that we're going to teach in or help our clients with. Time management is being one, marketing being two, staffing being three, and cash flow and profitability being number four. So it's hard to say that any one of those is more important than any other in some ways, but it is very possible to say that time management is the first of those issues that you have to deal with. And the reason is, if you don't deal with your time well, you're not going to have the time to deal with anything else well. Unless you manage your time well, you're not going to be able to get out and market. If you're not dealing with your time well, you're not going to have the patience to deal with your staff well, to do the hiring process the way it ought to be done, to manage your people the way they ought to be managed. And you certainly are going to have a hard time evaluating your cash flow and profitability. And we'll see as we go through the call what a direct link there is between how you manage your time and how profitable your firm is. So, again, I don't know if it's the most important thing, but it's certainly the first thing. So as we're laying the foundation, just like if you're laying the foundation of a building, you've got a cornerstone, and you've got four other corners, and you've got to lay those four corners right. And there's probably pillars or supports at each of those corners that are going to bear a lot of the load of the building you're going to build afterwards. And so I really want to talk today about the four cornerstones, if you will, of the foundation of time management. And they are your weekly planning session, your production time, your time template, and your approach to A, B, versus C and D clients. So those are the four things we're going to hit on today, your weekly planning, your production time, your time template, and how you control A and B versus C and D clients. So let's start with the first thing, and the first thing is weekly planning. I've actually never read Alice in Wonderland, although I bet some of you have, but I know that there's a scene in there where Alice comes to a crossroads and doesn't know where to go and asks one of the characters which path or which road she should take, and the other character asks Alice, well, where are you going? And she says, well, I don't know. And the other character responds, well, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And that's how a lot of us approach how our weeks are going to happen. We don't plan out where we're going, and therefore it doesn't really matter how you go through your week because it's going to be chaotic. But the reality is, unlike Alice, there are definite things that you need to accomplish by the end of every week that you have. And so there ought to be a definite road to get there. And really, this is the key to starting out your time management, is that you should have some time set aside every week to do your weekly planning. Now, let me talk about the what and the when of weekly planning. The what of weekly planning is you need to probably divide your world into three sections that you need to have a plan for. Now, you may have more than these three items, but there are three three things that you definitely need to come up with a plan for. Number one, what are the priority production items that you're going to work on? What are the big tasks that you personally have to accomplish this week, the things that you have to work on that you can't delegate to other people? You need to identify each of those things. You need to identify the due dates, and you need to provide an estimate for how long it's going to take you to do those items. So at the beginning of the week, you should sit down, look at the week that's coming up at you, and figure out, what do I personally have to do that can't be delegated to anyone else? What's the priority of what day it needs to be accomplished this week, and how long is it going to take me to accomplish that? So that's the first thing in your weekly planning you need to look at, is what are the big production items that you have to do. Second item you need to look at is, what are the big production items that you need to delegate? What big tasks are going on out there that you're going to delegate and then monitor as someone else does the actual production? What things on your list of things to get done this week can you give to somebody else that they're going to do, and you're just going to manage it and make sure that it gets done? So that's the second thing. You should plan out what are those tasks, when are they due, and who is responsible for doing them. So that should be the second thing. And then the third thing, and you'll hear a tinge of Mark Powers here, the third thing is that you should always have some idea of what you're going to do marketing this week. No matter how busy the week is, I bet there's some time where you're in the car, you can pick up a cell phone and call one of your referral sources and touch base with them. I bet no matter how busy your week is, at some point you could shoot an email out to somebody that you haven't connected with in a while and just remind them that you're out there and that you're thinking about them. So those are the three things you should always be setting a plan for at the beginning of the week. Number one, what are the big things I'm going to be working on? Number two, what are the big things I've delegated that I need to monitor other people as they're working on it? And then number three, what marketing am I going to accomplish this week? Now, for those of you that have been part of the Atticus coaching system, and you've been perhaps to the advanced implementation system, you'll find that that planning is embodied in Form 13.06. If you've not been put through that system and you want to see our Atticus planning form, just email me when the call is done, and I'll be happy to send it to you or have my assistant do it. By the way, if you need to contact me, again, my name is Patrick Wilson, and let me give you my contact information if you have questions following this. My email address is simple. It's Patrick, P-A-T-R-I-C-K, at Atticus Online. That's A-T-T-I-C-U-S-O-N-L-I-N-E, AtticusOnline.com. And if you want to reach me by phone, good luck, because I'm on the phone with lawyers most of the day, but you can leave a message and I'll call you back. My direct phone line is 407-831-4558. Area code 407-831-4558. All right, so that's the what of weekly planning. The second question about weekly planning is when. When are we going to do this? When are we going to take a look at this? And there's really two good options for you. And I really don't care which one you do, but I'll explain why people choose different ones. Probably the most common time to do weekly planning would be right at the very beginning of the week, first thing Monday morning. Obviously, a lot of people do that because Monday morning is a time when we typically are not meeting with clients or going to court. We don't have too much else going on. It's usually a quieter time when us and most of our staff are in our office. And, of course, it's the beginning of the week, and what better time to plan what's going to happen that week than right at the very beginning. So that's probably the most popular time to do it. However, there is a significant minority of people, I am one of them, by the way, that does their planning on Friday afternoon. And I'll tell you why I do it and why my clients that do it on Friday afternoon, why they do it on Friday afternoon. And the reason I began doing it on Friday afternoon is that I am a weekend worrier, or at least I used to be a weekend worrier. Back when I was practicing law, I had the following dynamic that I bet a number of you can relate to. I would go home on Friday afternoon without having planned my week to follow. During the day Saturday, I might be vaguely worried about things that I didn't know what was going on at the office. I wasn't sure if my I's were dotted and my T's were crossed and if I was really prepared for everything that was coming up. But that was rather a vague anxiety on Friday night and Saturday. But Sunday, that anxiety would build gradually all day until it reached a crescendo about 8 o'clock Sunday night. And about 8 o'clock Sunday night, I would drive in a panic to the office thinking, I've got to look at my calendar. I've got to look at this pile of work on my desk and figure out if there's any time bombs in there and figure out what I'm doing with my week. And I would go into the office about 8 o'clock Sunday night and spend an hour or two getting organized, and then I would go home. I'm just curious, is there anybody out there on the call that can relate to that, that that dynamic is going on with you on kind of a regular basis?
Oh, yes. It's Howard Strauss.
Okay, Howard. And is that kind of a lifelong pattern for you, or is that just a more recent thing?
Well, I've been a Attica student for several years, and I used to, but I've been taught how to get around that, and I usually do my planning either Friday afternoons or Saturday mornings.
Oh, very good. And has that pretty much remedied that Sunday night panic for you?
Yes, it's gone a long way. I've gotten rid of about 80% of it, but occasionally something will pop up and I'll say, oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Okay.
So I can't say it, I don't know if anything's 100%, but it sure has gone an enormous way towards helping me out.
Good, good. Well, hey, we'll take 80%. 80% improvement's a lot better than no improvement.
Oh, so. You bet. Yeah.
And only going to the office 20% of the Sunday nights is a lot better than going every Sunday night. Well, before I'd ever heard of Atticus, when I was still practicing, I decided it was stupid to ruin my Sunday nights in such a fashion when I could be home relaxing. And so I began doing it on Friday afternoon. And lo and behold, when I came to Atticus and heard what they were teaching, that was one of the things they recommended. So both Howard and I can testify as practicing attorneys that's one of the best things you can possibly do. To eliminate that weekend worry. So that's the win of your weekly planning, would be on either Friday afternoon or first thing Monday morning. I'm curious, is there anybody out there that's tried weekly planning and is running into some difficulties with it?
I have done, this is Howard Strauss again, but I have, after a while, I get, it does seem somewhat like drudgery occasionally. Most of the time it doesn't, but occasionally I'll have times where I kind of have to really fight it to sit down and actually go through it and plan it. But I'm really happy that I did, because when I don't do it, I pay for it during the week.
You know, that's universally what my clients are telling me, Howard, is that some of the times you just don't feel like doing it. And that's going to be true of a lot of our work. I mean, there's going to be a lot of our work that just every now and then just doesn't seem that palatable to do. But my clients also tell me without fail that the weeks they don't do their weekly planning are their most chaotic weeks. I bet some of you can relate to this. Are there some of you that are you know, maybe about 50-50, maybe about half the time you do weekly planning and maybe about half the time you end up not doing weekly planning? Is there anybody out there that can relate to that?
Every Friday I clean my desk off. Yeah.
I'm sorry? Was someone responding to the question? I could hear somebody talking, but I couldn't tell if they were responding to the question. Well, I'm just going to assume that a few of you can relate to that. And I can almost guarantee you what's happening. And that's going to be during your most busy, most chaotic weeks, those are the times you're least likely to stop and do planning. Our experience has shown that during your most busy, most chaotic weeks, those are the weeks when you're most likely not to do the planning. Of course, the great irony is those are the weeks that you most need to do the planning. It's in the weeks where you have a lot of work and you have a lot of chaos going on that you most need to do the planning. And why is that? Well, planning brings order out of chaos. And it's going to help you work more efficiently through the week than if you go just rather helter-skelter in a reactive mode throughout the week. There's no question about it. As a matter of fact, it's one of the major things I work on with my clients when they're first starting with Atticus is just developing the regular discipline of doing it every single week. So one of the things I would recommend if you're struggling with that is, number one, put it on your calendar as a perpetual appointment. If you struggle doing your planning time in a regular and consistent way, the first thing you should do to remedy that is to put it on your calendar at a particular time and to have it just be repeating at that particular day of the week, that time of day, as far as your calendar goes out. So if I were to look at the year 2020, I should see from 8:30 to 9 o'clock planning time on your calendar. There's real power in that because if we have it at the same day and the same time and you're disciplined enough to stick with it for a while, eventually it will become habit for you and you'll do it without thinking. You just get on autopilot with it because that's what you automatically do at the end of the day Friday, or that's what you automatically do at the beginning of Monday morning. Is there anybody out there that's gotten pretty much on autopilot with doing your weekly planning? Is there anybody that's doing it fairly automatically now?
I guess I'll say I'll do it. I do it automatically most of the time unless I'm sick or something like that. This is Howard.
Howard again? Let me pick on my friend in Fort Worth, Dick Price. Dick, tell me, how are you doing with your weekly planning? Is that something you do regularly or irregularly or don't do at all?
I do it most Monday mornings. Go through. I have a priority list that I look at, and I go through that most Monday mornings and then have a meeting with my assistant.
And is that something you've been doing consistently for a while?
Yeah, for a long time.
Okay. Would you say that you're pretty much on the level of autopilot with that, that you know, unless you're out of town or something, that planning session is going to happen?
Yeah, I feel bad if I don't get it done, so
okay.
I guess that's right.
Can you describe for the group what kind of difference that makes for you? Some of the people are not in as much of a habit. They're not sure why this is important, maybe, as they're hearing us talk about it.
Well, it helps me separate the important things from the less important things and focus on the things that are important and urgent if two of those characteristics coincide. But I try to work on the cases where it's either there's a time element involved or it's a very important case, or certainly I also evaluate if this is a good client or not. I tend to focus on the good clients who have things to do.
Right. Yeah, you might as well work on the clients
so
you're going to actually get paid by, right?
Yeah, it makes it more profitable.
Good, good. And have you found at any point a tendency to scrap your planning during weeks that were really busy or really chaotic?
Yeah, sometimes I do get caught up in other stuff, and if I have to go to court Monday morning, which I usually try to avoid, if I have to, that makes it difficult, and I end up doing it later in the day or catching up later, and that keeps me disorganized.
Well, it's excellent, though, that you're just rescheduling it for a different time of the day or a different day of the week. A lot of people, if they're normally doing their planning on Monday morning and something comes up Monday morning, they'll just abandon their planning for the whole week. So you're doing the next best thing. You can't really help sometimes if court appointments or whatever are scheduled Monday morning, and that's to bounce that appointment to the nearest available time. That's a really helpful thing to do. So, all right. Well, thank you, Dick. Thanks for doing that. So, first pillar, then, is the weekly planning. We've got to stop once a week, quit working on the work, and start organizing how the work is going to be done. Organizing how the work is going to be done is going to greatly add to the speed and efficiency of the work and make sure, as Dick pointed out, that you're working on the right work. And ultimately, that's actually going to translate into more money coming at the end of the month. All right. Well, let's move on from that to the second pillar of time management. And that's your production time. That's your production time. Now, if you've been around Atticus any length of time, you know what I mean by that term. But since it's an Atticus-created term of art, I want to define it for you again to make sure we're absolutely clear what I'm talking about. Because there does seem to be a lot of confusion about what people would call production time that we at Atticus would not put under the umbrella of production time. So let me tell you what production time is and isn't from our point of view. Production time is time that's set aside to do the type of work that requires deep focus and concentration. Production time is time set aside on your calendar to do the type of legal work that requires deep focus and concentration. So things that would not qualify, therefore, as production time would be things like opening the mail, things that you can do with half your brain tied behind your back. Those may be important things to do, and you may need time blocked off for those things, but those are not production time things. Production time is for things that require deep focus and concentration in your legal work. So it's usually going to be document review and document production. So you're going to be reading things or you're going to be writing. That's really what production time is set aside for most of you. It is not going to involve interaction with other people except at the absolute most minimum level. So while meeting with your staff and talking to clients, talking to the lawyers is very important. It's not production time stuff. Again, production time is just the type of work you can do alone behind closed doors that requires deep focus and concentration. And the reason we have such a big emphasis on this is where so much time is lost in a typical attorney's day. If you've got a piece of paper, I would like you to write a simple equation on your piece of paper there. First thing I want you to do is write the word busy. Write the word busy, B-U-S-Y, and then the equal sign, and then the word productive. Busy equals productive. And now I want you to go back, and I want you to put a big slash through that equal sign, because being busy does not equal being productive. A lot of lawyers, I wish you could see me on a webcam, because in live settings I kind of act this out, but a lot of lawyers will tell me their day looks something like this. They're sitting at their desk, they're trying to draft a document. In the middle of drafting a document, the phone rings, they answer the phone, they talk to somebody for a while, they hang up the phone, that reminds them of another phone call they need to make, so they make that phone call. In the middle of that phone call, their paralegal comes in, they wave at the paralegal to come on in and give them the finger, it's just going to be 1 minute till I hang up. As soon as they get off the phone, they then interact with their paralegal for a minute or two, answering their questions. Then when the paralegal leaves, then their secretary has come in, and they interact with their secretary for a couple minutes. She has some questions. They respond to those, and the secretary leaves. That reminds them of another phone call they need to make because the secretary brought in a message of a phone call she took earlier. So they then return that phone call. At the end of that phone call, they think, oh, I should get back to my document. But you know what? Now I've got to go to the bathroom. So I get up and I go to the bathroom. On my way down the hall, my partner grabs me, and I end up in a 15-minute conversation with my partner about some billing issues. I finally make it to the bathroom. On my way back, I realize that my coffee's now gone cold, so I have to go refill my coffee. I finally get back to my office. The phone is ringing. I answer the phone, and this goes on, and next thing you know, it's lunchtime, and you've only gotten two sentences on the document you started at 9:30.
Do you have a camera in my office?
Now, that is being busy but not being productive, right? That's being busy but not being productive. So what we've got to do is we've got to carve aside some time that's really sacred, holy lawyer time. It's time that cannot be violated by other things, and it's just our little sanctuary in the middle of the day to crank out the type of work that requires deep focus and concentration. Because what happens if you don't carve out time to do this in the middle of the day? That work sits there all day and gets and stays undone, and then when do you do it? 7 o'clock at night. Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon. So it's eating into your nights and weekends, and so it's very important from our point of view to begin learning how to do this during the middle of the day. So obviously the first way to make production time work is to set aside some time during the middle of your day. If you're a morning person, you find yourself bright and alert in the morning, then maybe you want to do it early in the day. Maybe you want to do it in the a.m. If you're like me and you believe the morning was made for sleeping, and the afternoon and evening was made for everything else, then you may want to do like me and have your production time in the afternoon. So you do want to try to do it when you're most naturally awake and alert. And, of course, you have to balance it with client needs and court needs. If you have the type of practice where you're in court frequently in the morning, then it's not going to make sense to try to have your production time regularly in the morning. Obviously, you're going to have to try to do it in the afternoon. So you may have to balance it with client needs or court needs. If there's any real estate practitioners out there, you may find that you have a lot of production time, say, the first 2 weeks of your month, a little production time the third week, and no production time the fourth week. You may just be in closing after closing. So you do have to adapt it to the reality of the situation you're in. But it's very important that you have this on your calendar. So just like you have your weekly planning session on your calendar forever and ever at that same set time, I'd like you to go ahead, if you haven't done it already, and schedule production time as a real appointment, just like an appointment to meet with a client or to go to court or to take a deposition or to be at a closing. It's going to be the same type of real appointment that shows up on your calendar and is to be followed, just like your other real appointments. So we want to treat production time as a real appointment. But production time is really a three-step dance. It's a three-step dance. Production time never stands alone. Because what we want to do, if we're going to work on stuff that requires deep focus and concentration, and we don't want to be interrupted during this time, we want to remain productive for the entire hour or 2 hours we're going to be in production time, we've got to figure out some structures to eliminate the interruptions. Well, interruptions are really going to come from three main sources. Number one, they're going to come from your staff and your coworkers. Number two, they're going to come from the outside world via the telephone. And number three, they're going to come from yourself. They're going to come from yourself. So it's going to come from, number one, from your staff, number two, from the outside world, primarily via the telephone or email, and then number three, self-interruptions. So let's talk about how we're going to deal with those three types of interruptions so that we can be left to fully concentrate during our production time. Number one, staff and coworkers. The most important thing to do with your staff is to meet with them quickly. Think of this as like a quick huddle with your staff, probably not going to last more than 5 minutes, immediately prior to your production time. So you're going to meet with your key staff, the people that really rely on you for they need communication with you in order to do their work. You're going to meet with them briefly right before reproduction time and say, hey, I'm about to go behind closed doors for an hour or two. I don't want to be disturbed unless it's an emergency. What do you need to know from me before I go behind closed doors? So that's very simple and straightforward and usually very quick. So that's always going to precede, come before your production time. Then you're going to go behind closed doors. You're going to pull out your priority work, your A work, your B work, your C work, or number one, number two, number three projects, however you look at it. And you're going to pick up that first thing, and you're just going to power through whatever it is. Once you've finished it, you're going to set it aside. You're going to pick up the second thing, and you're going to power through whatever it is, and you're going to set it aside. Then you're going to pick up the third thing and power through it and set it aside, and so on and so forth until you've done all your work, or more likely, you've run out of your production time, the hour or two that you've had it set aside. Now, when you've finished powering through all that work without interruption and just staying in a deep state of focus and concentration for an hour or two, at the end of that, you're probably going to have some phone calls to return. You're probably going to have some phone calls to return because you need to talk to your receptionist or assistant or whoever's answering the phone for you and make sure that they are screening your calls so that only true blue emergencies are put through to you during production time. If anybody needs a script for what to say, we have such a script at Atticus. I'd be happy to have Cindy email that to you. You can request that from us. And but it's just a little script that your whoever's answering the phone can say to explain to the outside world that you're not available right now, but you'll be returning your phone calls at a set time afterwards. So that's the third part of the dance, is returning phone calls after your production time. So the dance looks like this. Number one, huddle with staff. Number two, go behind closed doors and have production time. Number three, return phone calls that were where messages were taken during your production time. And if you do those things, that's going to balance your staff's need for communication with you and your clients and the outside world's need for communication with you. And again, in the script, what we want to have them say is the definite time that you'll be returning phone calls. So if your production time is going to last, say, from 9:30 to 11, that's a common time period. Your production time is going to be 9:30 to 11. During that time period, your secretary or whoever is going to say, I'm sorry, Mr. Wilson's not available right now. However, he will be returning his phone calls between 11 and 12. Can he call you back then? Generally, the answer is going to be yes. Occasionally, no. If it's no, then we'll try to schedule another time. But the main thing clients want to know when you're not available is what? That you're going to call them back at a definite time. The most anxiety-ridden thing a client can get is to leave a message for you and not have any idea when you're going to call them back. We all experience this regularly. I bet half of you right now are waiting on a return phone call from somebody, and you have no idea if and when they're going to call you back. And that's not a fun place to be. So let's not do that to our clients. Let's give them a definite time we can call them back, and it's going to be right at the end of production time. So, again, production time is always starts with a huddle and then powering through the work. And then returning phone calls afterwards. So I'd like to hear from somebody that's had some success with production time, either right now or maybe at some time in the past. Pipe up for me, if you will, if you've had some success with production time.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
This is Mark. You mentioned that there was three things, one of them being yourself as an interruption source.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, let me go back to that. I just dealt with staff, didn't I? So the staff can interrupt you, so we want to make sure we've got the huddle beforehand. We're having phone calls held so that the outside world is not interrupting us. Also, those outside interruptions in the form of phone calls can also come in the form of emails. If you have that irritating, terrible, terrible thing on your email system where your email bings or a little window pops up every time you get a new email, you need to disable that thing during your production time. That's going to be a source of interruption for you if you have anything in your email system that bings or a window pops up or any other alert that a new email comes in. Listen, if somebody's emailing you, it can't be that big of an emergency, right? Nobody ever emailed the fire department. My house is on fire. Hope you can get here soon. Doesn't happen. Anybody that emails you can wait an hour or so for a response, so it's going to be okay to turn that off. And then question the gentleman just raised a minute ago is, what about self-interruptions? I'm sorry, was that Mark? Who was it that was asking about self-interruptions?
Mark in Massachusetts.
Mark, since you volunteered, I'll pick on you for just a second. Tell me about your personal issues with self-interruptions. What kind of things do you find yourself interrupting your production time to do?
For the most part, it's lack of self-discipline. You know, I can have a good schedule laid out that says, here's my priorities and here's what to do, but I don't want to do them. And then I see some little thing that says, well, this would kind of be enjoyable to do. It'll only take me 5 minutes, so I'll do that, and then the day goes by.
Well, welcome to the Procrastinators Club.
Thank you.
I'm a charter member. As a matter of fact, one of my funniest memories from law school was I forget exactly what was going on the next day, but I either had an important test to take or a big paper due. Whatever it was, I was not finished. I had not finished studying or not finished writing, whatever it was. And about 3 or 4 days after that, they were beginning on-campus interviews. And I'm not sure how it was at the schools you guys went to, but at Vanderbilt, we were fortunate to have a lot of firms come from the region, different parts of the country, to interview us during a couple of weeks a year. And so that was happening about 3 days later. And so when I should have been working on this big project that was due the very next morning, or the test I had to take the next day, instead I was ironing a shirt. I mean, I was there with a bottle of spray starts and the ironing board, and in my living room, ironing a shirt, getting ready for interviews like 3 days later, during which time the phone rings, and I answer it, and it's my best friend from law school, John Garman, who's now a law professor, by the way. And so John calls, and he goes, hey, what are you doing? And I have this moment of crisis where I'm not sure if I should answer honestly because it's so embarrassing that I've not finished my paper or my studies, and here I am ironing a shirt. But then I'm thinking, oh, it's John. John knows me. I've got no shame with John. So I fess up, and I say, I'm ironing a shirt. And I go, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm polishing my shoes. And he also had not finished. So first thing is just to kind of let yourself off the hook and know that you're among a very prestigious group of people if you find yourself procrastinating in such a way. But there are ways to overcome it. As a matter of fact, that was one of the things that actually attracted me about coming to work for Atticus, was that I knew that if I was going to coach this stuff, I was going to have to get over it myself. So let me talk to you then about you and the others that may be struggling with this kind of issue about what to do. First thing we want to do is we want to look at the work that we consider to be drudgery and see if there's not somebody we can delegate that to. It may be that there's somebody already on your staff that you can give that type of work to that you don't find very fun. If you can, you absolutely should. Secondly, you might find that there's somebody that it's work you could delegate, but you have not trained anybody to do that type of work. In which case, do yourself a long-term favor and invest the time in training somebody else to do the type of work that you consider to be drudgery. Obviously, you don't have to worry about procrastination on work that you're delegating to other people to do. They might have to worry about procrastinating, but that's their issue, right? So let's see if we can't delegate it or train somebody else so that we can delegate it. That's really the first place to look. Second place is, now, there's obviously going to be some work that you just can't delegate. It's work that a lawyer has to do. You're the lawyer. You've got to do it. What I do in that case is, the two things I found that have worked really well are, number one, how can I do this? I've got one of my clients calls it his crap time. And it's all the work that he considers to be crap, and he's got an hour a week that he does all of his crap work. And so he just kind of grouped that all together so he can just handle it all at one time. And that way somehow it's more palatable. If he's just got an hour a week to do all the work that he just kind of hates doing, somehow he can just kind of get himself psyched up to do it and just work through it all at that time. So that's something some people have done. What I generally do that works a little better for me and for a number of my other clients is to set up a reward. I can't make the work itself enjoyable. By its very nature, it's not enjoyable, and therefore I'm likely to procrastinate on it. But what I can do is reward myself for having finished it. So now what might be a reward for you might be different from a reward for somebody else. For me, I'm a social person. I get lots of emails every day. I've got family and friends all over the country that email me just in a social way. And so when I finish, I'll tell myself I can't check personal email until I finish this unpleasant task. But when I'm finished, I can take a 10-minute break and read and respond to email from my brothers or friends elsewhere. So for me, that's a treat. Now, maybe for you, that's not a treat. Maybe a treat for you is getting an ice cream cone or something. So if I just finish this project, then I'll get a bite to eat or something. So those two things have worked very well for a lot of people. Number one, trying to just have an hour a week that's really just your unpleasant crap work time, if you will. And then number two, trying to set some immediate reward for finishing that unpleasant work. Have you tried anything like that in the past, Mark?
Sorry, I have to get the mute button off.
That's okay.
No, those are both good ideas.
Well, do me a favor, Mark. I'd love to hear how this works for you. Why don't you try those things for the next couple weeks, and then say October 14th, shoot me an email or give me a call and let me know how that worked for you.
Okay.
And we can tweak it a little bit more to see if that's going to help.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else out there that's struggling with procrastination and just not getting to the stuff? All right. Well, I'm going to trust that nobody had anything significantly different. Let me tell you one other thing about production time and why busy does not equal being productive. If you've been to the Atticus Forum or Practice Builder, you've probably heard the study referenced. But there was a study done a number of years ago. Unfortunately, I did not save the article that I read. But there was a study done by a university, and it wasn't attorneys, but I believe it was architects. Whoever it was, they have substantially similar work to attorneys in that there are different time periods of the day where they really need to focus and concentrate, mentally hunker down, as it were, and just power through some work. And so it's very, to that extent, their day is very similar to that of attorneys. And what they did was they had these guys in their office, and they hooked them up to EEGs that would measure their brain waves. And as you know, brain waves take on different patterns depending on the type of activity that your brain is engaged in. So if you're in REM sleep, it's going to look like one thing. If you're watching a funny movie, it's going to look like another thing. Or if you're in deep focus and concentration, it's going to have a distinct pattern for that. So they had these people set up in their office, and they let them go to work, and they let them establish a deep pattern of focus and concentration as they were working behind closed doors. And then they would send in an assistant or a coworker for a controlled interruption. And they would ask them to stay in there, interact with the architect for between 30 to 60 seconds, and then get out. And so they would do that. They would come out. They would then let the architect go back to work. They would monitor the EEG and make sure that it got back in the deep focus and concentration range. Then they would send a coworker back in for another controlled 30 to 60-second interruption. Then they would come back out. They'd let them go back into concentration. Then they'd interrupt them, so on and so forth. And they did this for about 2 hours. At the end of the 2 hours, they interviewed all of the architects, and they would ask them a series of questions. The first question was, who interrupted you? And they could generally name the people that interrupted them. And then they would ask them, how many times were you interrupted? And they generally were pretty accurate about how many times they were interrupted. And then they would ask them, how much focus did you lose because of those interruptions? How much time was lost? And they would usually get a blank stare in response to that. Nobody knew. They would then show them the EEG. And the tail of the tape really told the story. And what they found was, in this group, that there was a predictable range of time from between when the focus was interrupted and how long it took to reestablish that focus at the same level it was at the point of interruption. So to get all the way back and deep as a thought as you were at the moment of interruption, not counting the time we were actually interacting with somebody, they subtracted that time out. And the range of time they found to get all the way back into focus was between 5 to 7 minutes. The really quick people could get back into a deep focus in 5 minutes. The slower people, it took a full 7 minutes. So if you're trying to work on something during the course of your day and you're interrupted, say, just 3 times in an hour, and if you think about how your day goes often, 3 times would not be a lot. But that's just like 2 phone calls and one interruption from a staff person, right? So just 3 times in 1 hour, if you think about that lost 5 to 7 minutes per interruption, how much time is that? Well, that's between 15 and 20 minutes. That's a quarter to a third of your hour. Now, that's time that you were busy, right? You were always doing something, but you weren't productive. So some of you probably need to take that sheet of paper where you wrote busy does not equal productive, and you need to rip it out, and you need to tape it to your wall, because you need to be reminded that being busy is not the same as being productive, and allowing interruptions during your production time is really going to hurt you. Any other questions or comments about production time?
This is Larry Mears from Naples.
And yeah, Larry.
One of the things that I have found helpful, and I'm a charter member of the Procrastinators Club, and throw in a little ADD on top of it, is I have my secretary be a policeman for me, and I have her sit in my office and make sure I get the stuff done. It wastes her time, but I sure get a lot of stuff done.
That is great, Larry. As a matter of fact, my most ADD client of all time, who I won't name, But he had such a struggle with this that what we eventually did for him was, and some of you may need to go this far, at the beginning of his production time, his assistant would come in and say, what are you planning on working on this hour? And she would jot down what he said he was going to accomplish. She would then unplug his phone and his internet connection so that he couldn't talk on the phone and so that he couldn't send and receive email. And then she would say, okay, I'll see you in 2 hours. She would walk out and close the door behind her. On top of that, I made my client, he had a candy jar that he kept on the front of his desk. Inside that candy jar were checks made out to his assistant in the amount, I think, of $20. He had a bounty on his head for every time he self-interrupted. If she could catch him self-interrupting, he had to give her a $20 check. So she had a financial incentive to keep him on track. The first 2 weeks he did it, I think he paid out $200 to her. I'm not making this up. He paid out about $200 to her. But his billings so dramatically increased that he probably billed $1,000 more of time than he normally would have with what he reported. So even though he had to pay $200 to her, he billed $800 up above that. He billed $1,000, so he still was $800 to the good. So if that's what you need to do, if you need to have somebody come and sit in the office with you, if you need to have somebody come in, write down what you're going to do, unplug your phone, unplug your internet connection, check on you at the end of it. If you need to pay them a bounty every time you tolerate an interruption that you shouldn't tolerate, if that's what it takes, I assure you, financially, it will pay off. Thanks for sharing that, Larry. Anybody else with a question or comment on production time? All right, well, let me move to the third pillar. And the third and fourth pillar we won't spend as much time on. But the third pillar is really something very closely related to production time. As a matter of fact, production time is really a subset of this third one, and that's the time template. The time template. Most of you, if you've been around Atticus, you've heard about the time template. Let me define again what it is and what it isn't. A time template is an idealized expression of how you would like to structure your week. An idealized expression of how you'd like to spend your time in an ideal week. It's not how you're actually going to spend your time in any real week, but it's the target that you're going to shoot toward. And on that time template, you're going to decide ahead of time what kind of things you need to do in a typical week, how much time you need to do them, and when is the best time to do them. So it's going to include on your time template things like, obviously, your weekly planning session, your production time. Of course, production time implies that there's going to be a huddle beforehand and a return call time afterwards. Maybe marketing lunches are going to be on there. Maybe some time set aside to work on your business. If you're working with an Atticus coach, you probably already have an appointment for that. If you're not working with an Atticus coach, you need to have some time to take off that technician hat and put on your entrepreneurial hat and think like a business owner for an hour or two a week. Probably some staff meeting time is going to need to be on there. So it's determining what kind of things, other than client-driven things. Client-driven things are going to show up automatically on your calendar, right? Appointments with the clients, appointment with courts, appointment for closings and other transactional stuff, those things will schedule themselves more or less. What you need to do is make sure you've got time built in for entrepreneurial and managerial activities. Technician activities will take care of themselves. As a matter of fact, if you look at your calendar now, you'll probably see somewhere between 80 and 100% of the appointments are technician appointments. What's really missing is often the time to do managerial and entrepreneurial things. And so the time template is going to help you decide when you want to do those things. Once you've decided when you want to do those things, again, you write that out in an idealized format. Again, for those of you that have worked in the advanced implementation system, there's a sample time template. It's form 1301 and a blank one on form 13.02. If you want to see a sample or a blank one, again, just email me after the call, and I'll be happy to send one of those forms to you via email. Once you've designed a time template, though, of course, idealized things are not all that helpful until we try to translate them into reality. So you want to take the elements of your time template, and you want to actually begin scheduling them on your actual calendar. Like I suggested before, if you're going to have your planning time on Monday morning, you need to go ahead and make that a perpetual appointment on your real calendar every Monday morning. If you're going to try to have production time every day between 2:30 and 4, you need to go ahead and put that in your calendar as an appointment. Now, many of these appointments, though, are special appointments. a special kind of appointment, I should say. Most of you only recognize two types of appointments, but there's a third type of appointment that if you've not been familiar with, I want to educate you about today. The first type of appointment that you're all familiar with is what I call a hard appointment. A hard appointment is an appointment that you keep no matter what. So if you've got an appointment with a court or with a client, you don't blow that off. You show up, and you show up on time, right? So if it says today at 4 o'clock, you're supposed to be at the judge's chambers, guess where you're going to be today at 4 o'clock? You're going to be at the judge's chambers. That's an automatic. That's a hard appointment. There are other appointments which may be soft appointments for you. Maybe in the past you've tried to do production time, and it was on your calendar even, but when the time came about, you actually just blew it off. Soft appointments are those appointments that you feel the freedom to postpone or ignore ad hoc and at your own whim. There's no immediate terrible consequence for postponing or even blowing off soft appointments. So they'll actually show up on your calendar. They're sort of masquerading as a hard appointment, but the reality is you can and have blown them off because there's no immediate negative consequence. And most people just live in the world of those too. And so what they begin hearing Atticus saying incorrectly is, I've got these soft appointments that are usually like my managerial and entrepreneurial time. And what Atticus is saying, what Patrick's telling me is I really need to make those into hard appointments. And I just need to stick with those. And the answer I have to that is not exactly. Because if you converted all those soft appointments into hard appointments, what would happen to your actual calendar? It would be too rigid. It'd be too rigid. You couldn't do it. You couldn't keep all of those appointments and respond to the dynamic needs of the outside world because the courts and the clients are not going to flex around what's on your time template, I assure you. So you need to have a third type of appointment. It's an appointment I call a bouncing appointment. A bouncing appointment is an appointment that moves but doesn't go away. So let's say you have production time scheduled this afternoon from 2:30 to 4, but you've got a very important client meeting that you need to have this afternoon at 2:30. Now, in the past, you would probably just make that a soft appointment. You'd probably just blow off your production time. What I would like you to do instead is see if you can't move that production time earlier in the day or maybe the next day. What I'd really like you to think of is all those little 30-minute increments on your calendar. It's sort of like tiles on a Scrabble board. And the name of the game is how do you rearrange all those little tiles so that your production time doesn't go away, but maybe happens at a different time? How can you rearrange things to accommodate the needs of the courts and the clients in such a way that doesn't throw everything else off the calendar for the week? So that's a bouncing appointment, and it's a compromise between the hard and the soft, and it's really the key to making your time template work. All right, well, let me go on to the last one. And in some ways, I've saved the best and most powerful to last, although I can talk about it very briefly. And the last pillar of time management is the ABCD client rule. Now, if you've had any exposure to Atticus, I'm sure you've heard about this, but we ask all of our clients to rate their clients and every one of their open and active files to give it a letter grade, just like a letter grade you would get in school. A is the very best, and then B for pretty good, C for not so good, and D for really bad. And you also know the 80-20 rule that accompanies the ABCD rule, and that is Pareto's principle, where basically about 80% of your time, somewhere between 60 to 80% of your time, will go to C&D clients, but they're only going to produce 20 to 40% of your money, whereas your A and B clients are only going to take up 20 to 40% of your time, while in return producing 60 to 80% of your revenue. Now, that's a rule of thumb. It's not always exactly true, but it's pretty much true, and most of you know it intuitively it's true. So being very careful about defining what's an A, B, C, or D client for you, setting up an intake system that does not take in C and D clients. If one slips through the crack, being rigorous about trying to move that client on, firing them, giving the file back, settling the case quickly, whatever we can do to get rid of that C and D client, and then, of course, marketing towards A and B clients. As an example, I had a client up in New England, by the way. I know there's a couple of you New Englanders on the phone today. I was up in Boston this last weekend where it was lovely, visiting one of my clients up there. And he divided up his we had him do a study about his A, B, C, and D clients. And what he found was his C and D clients were taking up 75% of his time.
Just make sure it's on the calendar, man.
He was producing 75% of his time but only producing 54% of his money. If we threw in his B clients and we said his B, C, and D clients, they were taking up 83% of his time, but only producing 61% of his money. conversely, when we looked at his A clients were only taking up 17% of his time, but were producing 39% of his money. 17% of his time was producing 39% of his revenue. That's a 22% gap. What we did that further, we broke it down and we looked at hours invested in C&D clients and then the dollar he got on average in return for that hour invested in a C&D client. We call that the effective hourly rate. We also looked at that same figure for his A clients. How many hours did he really invest in A clients? How many dollars did they really produce? And you can come up with an hourly rate figure based on what you actually collect. And based on the hours he actually invested and the dollars he actually collected, he found that his C&D clients were producing, on average, $155 an hour. $155 an hour. And maybe some of you are saying, well, hey, that's not bad. His A clients, however, his A clients were producing $475 an hour. $475 an hour for his A clients. And yet 75% of his time was spent on the C&D clients. So what do you think we did? Well, we immediately shifted his marketing strategy to go towards those A clients. We put in more rigorous intake systems to get rid of the C&D clients. And what he saw for 3 years running after that was that his gross revenue increased between 22 and 25% 3 years running. So he had between a 20 and 25% gross revenue growth 3 years in a row. And that's compared to the previous year, not compared to the original year, but each year he grew 20 to 25% over what he had the previous year without, mind you, an increase in the staff. He did not need to increase staff. And why did he not need to increase staff? Because as he was eliminating those C&D clients, those were the time eaters. He actually was able to take more vacation. The staff actually had less work to do than in the past because he eliminated more of the C&D and he learned to market for the A clients. So I don't know if that's an experience any of you guys have had, but that's saving the best for last. It's really the A, B, C, or D thing. That is just the most powerful thing you can do, not just for time management, but also for your profitability. Speaking of time management, I don't know that I've managed my time particularly well today. We've gone right up to 1 o'clock, and I know that you guys have places to go, and I do too. Is there any quick comment or question, though, that I can field before we go?
This is Mark in Massachusetts.
Yes, Mark.
I'm an estate planner, so my clients are ones that I don't have year after year, typically. You do the work, and then they're gone at least for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike a CPA who has this thing, you know, his clients come back year after year.
Right.
So I've never held out a lot of hope for using intakes to screen, particularly since it's really not the net worth of the client. It's often their attitude and factors that go into whether or not they are an A client or a D client. Is there hope for intake screening for an estate planning attorney?
Absolutely. Let me give you a few ideas. Number one, I would begin after the fact, rating the client, and then looking to see what referral source they came to, where they came from. So if you look at your top 20 list, what you'll find is some of those guys are sending you more A and D clients, and some of those guys are sending you more C and D clients. So kind of do a post-mortem on these folks after you've handled their estate. Give them an A, B, C, or D rating, and then track what the referral source was for that. I guarantee you'll find some trends. So let's say that you find Mr. Smith sending you a lot of C&D clients. That means in the future you want to look very closely at anybody that Mr. Smith sends over to you for an estate plan. Does that make sense thus far?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Then secondly, if a lot of it is sort of character and cooperation issues, I would listen to my gut at the initial client meeting. Your intuition is that kind of subconscious stuff that you can't really put words on sometimes, but it's been informed by decades and decades of life experience. And so if I have any misgivings about somebody in the initial client interview, even if I can't state exactly what that is, then I would trust that and maybe say no to some of those cases. Because I guarantee you, several of you right now are thinking about people that you had a bad feeling about initially, although you couldn't put your finger on it, and later on you regretted that you signed the person up as a client. So I would give a little bit more credit to your intuition and a little bit more power to say no, whenever you get that funny feeling inside. And then thirdly, and this is really just one of the best things any estate planner can do to eliminate C&D clients, is to raise your rates. A lot of times the poor attitude people also hate reaching into their pocketbook to pay you. And so by raising your rates, even $25 an hour will probably eliminate a good chunk of C&D clients for you. So try those things. If you've got, if you have some success or you have some problems, give me a call in a month or two after you have some experience, and I'll see if I can help you a little bit more with some more fine-tuning.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for staying so long. I'm sorry I took us 3 minutes over. Hope it was helpful for you today. Let me remind you, my email address is patrick@atticusonline.com. So if you're looking for any of the forms that I referenced today, or if you just need a quick question answered, feel free to email me, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Patrick.
Bye-bye.